Good afternoon. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the June 11th, 2021 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Board of Commissioners Management Committee. CJ Rotella, the Director of Information Technology for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Good afternoon. This is CJ Rotella. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on Rhode Island Housing's website within 3 to 5 business days after this meeting. Except for Management Committee, Board of Commissioners, and specific Rhode Island Housing staff, all callers will be muted during the meeting. To prevent any feedback or background noise, we ask the commissioners and participating staff to please mute your phone if you are not speaking. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with the audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-457-1240. Thank you.
Thank you, CJ. This is Carol Ventura. Corinne Myers, Acting General Counsel for Rhode Island Housing, will provide information on this telephonic meeting.
Good afternoon. This is Corinne Myers speaking. Pursuant to Executive Order 2046, which was most recently extended by Executive Order 2159 and may be further amended or extended, this meeting is being held by teleconference. Members of the public can visit the RA Housing website to view today's agenda and information on the actions being taken. If this teleconference is interrupted, we will stop the meeting until we can reconnect and audio is restored. I'd also like to provide some guidance to today's meeting participants. Commissioner Stephen McAllister will be presiding. Commissioners and staff, please remember to state your name each and every time prior to speaking. And when you are not speaking, please mute your telephone to minimize background noise. Now I will turn it over to Commissioner McAllister to call the meeting to order.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everybody. And we will call the meeting to order. I'm going to ask Carol to conduct a roll call of attendance of the Management Committee and the Board of Commissioners in attendance in Rhode Island Housing staff. Carol?
Thank you, Commissioner McAllister. This is Carol Ventura. I will now conduct a roll call of members of the Management Committee, Board of Commissioners in attendance, and staff of Rhode Island Housing. Chairman Nicholas Retsina.
Here.
Commissioner Steve McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Designee Leanne Burns.
Here.
Director James Thorson.
Here.
Staff of Rhode Island Housing, James Comer.
Here.
Lisa Primiano.
Here.
Carol LaChapelle.
Here.
Barbara Farrand.
Here.
Christine Hunsinger.
Here.
Corinne Myers.
Here.
Deborah Mancini.
Here.
Peter Pagonis.
Here.
Sarah Clausius Parks.
Here.
CJ Rotella.
Here.
Commissioner McAllister, the roll call is complete.
Thank you very much, Carol. Let's dive right into committee action number one. Committee action number one is the approval of minutes for the Management Committee meeting held on February 8th. Has everyone had a chance to review that? And if so, request a motion for approval.
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Leanne. Do we have a second? I can second that. Is there any discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, I'm going to ask the Acting General Counsel to conduct a roll call on a vote for favorable action on accepting the minutes.
This is Corinne Myers speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of approving the minutes of the Management Committee meeting held on February 8, 2021, say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Chairman Retsina?
Aye.
Director Thorson?
Abstain.
Noted. Commissioner Designee Burns?
Aye.
The ayes have it. The motion carries.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to committee action number two. This is for a recommendation for approval of a community development program funding awards. I'm going to ask James to present action number two. James?
Thank you, Commissioner McAllister. This is James Comer. As you know, the board in fiscal year 2021, as it has in years past, approved funding of $500,000 for the Community Development Program. This is a grant program that we've operated for some time, which provides funding to activities that provide opportunity and support to the residents and communities in which they live, largely activities that are outside of direct housing provision, but that support the activities necessary to have healthy and safe housing for our residents. In January of 2021, we issued an RFP for proposals for the grants. We received 18 applications, of which one was disqualified for not meeting threshold. Of the 17 eligible applications, the total ask for grant funding was $742,594. An internal committee was convened to review each proposal and rank them according to a pre-established scoring matrix. And I'm pleased to say that we have six successful proposals that we're recommending funding for in a total amount of $297,766. Those proposals are as follows. We have Amos House, which has been a long-term great partner and does great work in South Providence, applied for $50,000 to fund their Financial Opportunity Center and to fund the position of a housing program advocate to assist their clients with getting permanent housing. Comprehensive Community Action Program applied for $47,766 to augment their financial literacy training for the RI Works program. They will use this funding to include tenant education workshops and partner with the Center for Justice to embed a tenancy focus within their existing financial literacy curriculum. They're the lead agency for the Rhode Island Department of Human Services RI Works program, and they partner with a lot of other CAP agencies. And the ultimate goal of the program is to increase the number of families on public assistance to become self-sufficient. It's expected that a minimum of 650 individuals between their RI Works and Learn to Earn programs will receive training that's supported by this funding. Impact Rhode Island, which is a new organization to us, a relatively nascent group, we are recommending funding for $25,000 to develop an education and training program for home buyers, an education program for real estate professionals, first-time developer education, and a homelessness prevention education component that will serve underserved communities. The real estate course is already established, and they provide scholarships for students to attend if they cannot afford it. So this will help augment that and provide opportunities for more individuals to go through the course. They are, while a new organization, have a strong support from the City of Providence, and we wanted to give them this money to see how they were able to develop with some of these exciting programs. The next potential grantee is NeighborWorks Blackstone River Valley. They requested $50,000 for what, you know, to me is kind of the least sexy, but really one of the most impactful, I think, of these proposals, to have a data-rich comprehensive community development initiative. And essentially to build their software ability through Salesforce to have a centralized customer relationship management across all of the many programs that they offer. So when someone moves into housing that NeighborWorks operates, the computer system will know that they have children of a certain age who they will recommend for the daycare that they offer or the child care resources that they have. It will be an integrated data component that will speak to all parts of their business and alert them to the opportunities available for their residents and for the community members. It was really, really well done proposal, and we're very happy to recommend that. The next is the Rhode Island Office of Post-Secondary Commissioner, and it's $50,000 to support the medical assistance training program. They target participants living in affordable and public housing, and they've had 15 to 20 participants expected to graduate with training as medical assistants. This takes place at the Workforce Hub in Central Falls, and they've received $66,000 in matching funds from the Rhode Island Department of Education. They have 17 students in the pipeline right now slated to get their certificates. And again, as I said, they'll expect to get 15 to 20 more with the support of this funding. And lastly, the Wenasquatucket River Watershed Council requested $50,000 for their New Voices program. It's leadership training for youth living in the watershed area, largely in the Olneyville neighborhood of Providence, with a focus on environmental and racial justice. This is a bilingual program and engages youth in civic participation, advocacy, and community stewardship. It'll fund an eight-month cohort of about 70 youth online and in person doing environmental leadership training in schools, and it also leverages funding from the Federal Environmental Protection Agency. $22,000 of the $50,000 they requested will go towards undoing racism workshops, which should happen this summer with a smaller group ahead of the larger New Voices training when school comes back in session. I'm happy to answer any questions about the proposals.
Thank you very much, James. This looks like a great use of this funding, kind of spread it around to a number of different quality organizations for a number of different activities, which I think is great. Education, like you said, Salesforce, and stuff like that. So first I will ask for a motion to accept. We'll get a second, and then I'll open it up for any questions. So do I have a motion for favorable action?
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Motion to approve. Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Second. Thank you. Any questions for James on this this action here? Or
James,
comments?
This is Nick. I have a couple of questions, just briefly.
Sure.
I think it's a well. Steve is right. It's a good array of different interests, different backgrounds, and that's all good. I'm curious about Impact Rhode Island. That seemed. I was wondering whether Peter Pagonis was there at the meeting. Might comment on what niche they are filling.
Sure. It's really more, it's kind of a startup organization, Nick, and I think it's something that's community-based and delivering some of the services that other providers do, but doing it in a way that is located in the community, and I think from their proposal that is being delivered in a slightly different way that hopefully will resonate with some of the folks we're most trying to educate around these issues. Again, as I said, the City of Providence was strongly behind their proposal, and we did give them a little less money than they requested because it is a new group and wanted to see how they developed. But I think it has the potential to be a good partnership going forward if they're able to deliver on what they've proposed.
I assume you'll be watching all of them very closely.
Yeah, there's regular reporting requirements for any of the grantees. So we do track them over the course of the year and meet with them regularly.
One last question. I preface it with an apology. I'm sitting off-site. I don't have access to the program presentation, so it might be in the program there. Is there a lot of redundancy in this program? That is to say, recidivism in this program? Most of the applicants have received money earlier?
There are some. I would say, part of what we look at when we're, reviewing these proposals is that we don't become something that somebody counts on year over year necessarily, that we want to see people who are doing innovative things. And I think, anytime we review programs like this or proposals like this, we look to see what the broadest reach we can have. And so sometimes that is expanding upon existing programs that organizations have brought forward in previous years. And sometimes that's trying to invest in some more innovative things. There are some of our traditional partners that we work with on a variety of levels, both in housing and in supportive services, that, have used this problem very successfully. And oftentimes when they come back, it's for different programs or to expand existing programs into different areas. So I don't think it's become in any way kind of stale or where we're just funding the same things over and over again. I think our partners understand what this is about and have really done good things in terms of using it to broaden what they can do.
Good. I don't mean to catch you off guard, James, but what of the ones we funded this year, how many have been funded before?
I don't off the top of my head, Nick. I can certainly get back to you on that, though.
Okay. No, it sounds like a good program.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Any additional questions for James at this time?
This is Leanne. I just have a quick comment, which is I'm basically contractually obligated every time someone talks about financial literacy to reiterate the treasurer's support for those programs. And I'm sure I know he's glad to see more resources going to address financial literacy programming, especially for adults, which is definitely needed, but not as easy to get done.
Great. Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments? Hearing none, I'm going to ask the general counsel to conduct a roll call for vote for approval, recommended approval.
Thank you. This is Corinne Myers speaking. Before I take the roll, for preparation of the minutes and for the benefit of members of the public who may be listening, a reminder to the commissioners to please state your name prior to speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending the approval of Community Development Program funding awards as presented, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Chairman Ritsina?
Aye.
Commissioner Thornton?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Burns?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to committee action number three. It's for a recommendation for the approval of engagement of post-closing quality control vendor. Deborah, would you like to present this to us this evening?
Good afternoon. This is Deborah Mancini. This request for action seeks authorization for Rhode Island Housing to enter into a multi-year contract with Tenor Companies, Inc. to provide post-closing quality control audits for a single-family loan portfolio. To comply with investor insurer requirements, Rhode Island Housing engages a quality control vendor to perform audits on a sample of post-close loans originated through both Rhode Island Housing and its correspondent lenders. These services are currently performed by a third-party quality control vendor. In February 2021, Rhode Island Housing issued a request for proposals seeking responses from qualified vendors to perform the aforementioned services. The RFP was posted on Rhode Island Housing's website and the website maintained by the State of Rhode Island Department of Administration, Division of Purchases. Four vendors submitted proposals. A selection committee comprised of Rhode Island Housing staff reviewed and evaluated the written proposals in accordance with the criteria set forth in the RFP. The selection committee applied a weighted average score modeling for evaluation and comparing the responses. The committee assigned Tenor's proposal a weighted average score of 9 out of 10. Tenor's test scripts meet the requirements of FHA, VA, USDA, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and state and federal requirements. The annual cost of the contract is approximately $150,000. For these reasons, Rhode Island Housing seeks approval to engage Tenor as its quality control vendor for a term of 3 years with an option to renew the contract for an additional 2 years. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deborah. So first, what we'll do is we'll look for a motion. We'll get a second, and then we'll open it up for questions and comments. So do I have a motion for approval on this action?
So, Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
Okay. And do we have a second?
Jim Thorson, I second the motion.
Thank you very much. So we'll open up for questions at this time. Any questions from members of the committee?
This is Leanne. I have a question. I wanted to know who is currently providing these services and if there's a specific reason why we're seeking a new vendor.
Yes, the services are currently being provided by Avitac. We are seeking a new vendor because their contract is up for renewal, and we are currently going to be leasing software through Tenor Companies, Inc. To do servicing quality control reviews in-house, and it makes a lot of sense to have all of the quality control reviews in one place.
That makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
Thank you, Leanne. Any other questions at this time?
Steve, I have one question. Again, I don't have the paperwork in front of me. This is a relatively, not in a negative way, routine committee endorsement and the like. I'm curious, in the review, do they take MBE activity? Is that a plus to a proposal?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
In these proposals, do we... Can we look at minority business enterprises and give them any extra points?
Yes, we do.
Yes,
on the
points?
Sheet here, it looks like 5%.
I'm sorry, I don't have a sheet.
Yeah. So it says on the sheet here, firm minority status and affirmative action programs or activities, the weight is 5%
okay.
on our score
Thank
sheet.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome. Any other questions? Okay, hearing none, I will ask the general counsel to conduct a roll call for a vote for recommended approval.
This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending approval of the engagement of a post-closing quality control vendor, say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Commissioner McAllister.
Aye.
Chairman Ritsina.
Aye.
Commissioner Thorson.
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Burns.
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to committee action number 4, which is recommendation for approval of engagements of compensation consulting firm. I believe Barbara is going to present this to us. Barbara?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner McAllister. This is Barbara Farron. We are seeking approval to engage with a firm qualified to perform a comprehensive classification and compensation study. Rhode Island Housing's previous compensation study took place in late 2016. In March of 2021, we posted our request for proposals. We look to partner with a consulting firm that can provide guidance, analyze our current pay practices, and determine if they are competitive for our industry and geographic location. Compensation studies can also help to determine if our employees' salaries are in compliance with current employment, state, and federal laws. Our employees are our greatest asset. As the competition for talent continues to tighten in this employee-centric market, compensation studies are useful tools to help retain and attract talent. These studies determine the market value of each job, benchmark and propose equitable salary ranges, and ensures internal parity. To remain competitive, it's not only best practice to conduct them, but there are also benefits. They help to build a business case for salary levels that can be shared with all employees and will give us an accurate and unemotional third-party perspective on our employees' pay. They also create a culture of transparency and serves as the foundation of creating this strategy so that all HR representatives and managers can clearly communicate pay decisions while staying consistent. Three firms submitted proposals in response to the RFP. An internal Rhode Island Housing Selection Committee reviewed and scored the submissions in accordance with the selection criteria outlined in the RFP. Based upon the selection committee's evaluation of all proposals, MGT was determined to be the best qualified to provide Rhode Island Housing's comprehensive classification and compensation study with a score of 93.5 out of a possible 100. MGT was established in 1974 as a full-service management consulting firm providing high-quality management consulting services to public sector clients nationwide. Their corporate office is in Tampa, Florida, with additional offices around the country. The MGT Human Capital team has an impressive track record of providing customized solutions, objective research, and creative recommendations. MGT presented the best timeline and fees for this project. It should take 3 to 6 months to complete and cost around $32,000. In addition, MGT will provide Rhode Island Housing with ongoing training and advisory services for 1 year following the completion of engagement. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and this is Steve again. What I'm going to look for is we're going to get a motion, we'll get a second, and then we'll open it up for discussion and comments. Do we have a motion?
Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
Motion to approve. Do we have a second? And I can second that. This is Steve. My first question is, when was the last time we did this activity?
It was 5 years ago. It was 5 years ago. Yeah, it was in 2016.
Seems like yesterday. Wow, 5 years ago.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's how I feel, Steve.
Yeah. All right. Any questions from members of the committee?
Sorry, this is Leanne. I'm pretty sure you said this, but can you reiterate the cost of the engagement with MGT?
Yes, around $32,000.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions for members of the committee? Hearing none, we'll ask the General Counsel to conduct a roll call vote for favorable action.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Corinne Meyer speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you're in favor of recommending the approval of the engagement of a compensation consulting firm, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Chairman Racinus?
Aye.
Commissioner Thorson?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Byrne?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next, we're going to move to committee item number 5, recommendation for approval for the engagement of a software vendor for the Home Assistance Fund Program. Sarah is going to present this to us. Sarah?
Excuse me,
yes,
Mr. Chair. Before Sarah presents, I need to let you know that I have to leave.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, Commissioner.
Thank you. Thank you, Steve.
Hi, good afternoon. This is Sarah Colossius Parks. This request for action seeks authorization for Rhode Island Housing to engage HOTB Software Solutions, LLC, to provide software in support of the Home Ownership Assistance Fund Program, a foreclosure prevention program funded by the United States Department of Treasury. Rhode Island Housing will be administering $50 million on behalf of the state of Rhode Island to help Rhode Islanders in danger of foreclosure as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic. Rhode Island Housing issued a request for proposals to engage a software vendor for the Home Ownership Assistance Fund Program on April 26th. The RFP sought proposals from qualified firms to provide a web-based system with a public-facing portal for the submission of program applications by Rhode Island homeowners, as well as a back-end management system. We received 6 proposals by the May 12th deadline. A selection committee composed of staff from the Home Ownership and Loan Servicing Divisions, the Information Technology Department, and the Hardest Hit Fund Program Rhode Island reviewed each proposal and evaluated each vendor on multiple criteria. HOTB Software Solutions, LLC, ranked the highest. HOTB is the software currently used by Rhode Island Housing for the Hardest Hit Fund Program. Since 2016, HOTB has offered Rhode Island Housing prompt technical support and customer service. In the proposal, the vendor presented an updated public-facing portal, underwriting portal, and payment system. We had an opportunity to view a demo of the system, and it is well-organized and intuitive to use. HOTB set forth a 6-week implementation timeline, and obviously a quick turnaround is critical to program launch. The firm will advance software construction as program guidance from Treasury is released. HOTB was also the least expensive proposed software with a $40,000 one-time implementation fee and a $50,000 licensing fee, which includes up to 5,000 transactions for the first year of the contract. After the first year, they propose a fixed monthly cost of $3,000, which includes 20 transactions. There will be a $10 fee for each additional transaction. The final cost of the engagement will be determined based on the number of transactions processed. However, we estimate a 5-year cost of $423,000 based on an estimated 2,125 transactions. Other firms propose pricing from $604,000 up to $1.15 million over the same time period. I'm happy to answer any questions about this selection.
Thank you very much, and we will look for a motion first. We'll get a second, and then we'll open it up for questions. Do we have a motion?
This is Leanne. I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, Leanne, and I will second that. Do we have any questions or comments on action number 5?
Steve, I also have a question. This is Leanne. I just heard in the presentation that we use this this firm for other homeownership programs already. So this sort of starts to answer my question, but I also noticed that Yardie Systems, who has been engaged to do the emergency rental assistance program, also applied. And so I just sort of wondered, even though they did not score at the top, whether there was any value in having, you know, some combined work between those two programs, and if you could explain why, you know, this firm came out ahead of them when that, you know, it's not on like the matrix, but just from a contract management and also staff familiarity and working with the same firm, if there were any other drawbacks that I'm missing.
Yes, absolutely. Yes, they did. They scored in third, basically, after HOTB and one other firm. And mostly, Yardie was a bit more expensive than this known commodity of HOTB software for this program. So many of the Hardest Hit Fund program members that remain will be working on the new program for the Homeowner Assistance Fund. So I think we went with more of that we are more familiar with this program personally. We don't interact with the Yardie system. I do definitely hear your point about contract management and having already used them, but it was a comfort level already dealing with the company and knowing their product and its capabilities. Also, Counselor Direct works very closely with Treasury itself, so they understand the reporting guidelines, as well as it's a record system that we communicate with mortgage servicers, and that's going to be built right into this program. So we had a comfort level that they are familiar with this type of program.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much. Any other questions or comments?
Just one.
Go ahead.
Steve, I have one.
Yep.
It's a good question by Leanne. I want to really follow up on that second. We had the Hardest Hit Fund was a successful program, yet it was scarred somewhat by the OIG report a couple of years ago. I don't suspect that any of this firm was involved in that, were they?
No, absolutely not. There were never any findings related to this vendor.
I didn't think so, but I'll double check.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Any other questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, we will have the General Counsel do a roll call vote for recommended approval.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Corinne speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending the approval of the engagement of a software vendor for the Homeowner Assistance Fund program, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Chairman Racina?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Burns?
Aye.
The motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to committee action number 6, recommendation for approval of the fiscal year 2022 operating budget. Carol is going to lead us in this discussion. Carol?
Thank you, Commissioner McAllister. Today, we will walk you through our proposed fiscal year 2022 budget. I want to thank my colleagues, Carol LaChapelle, Nancy Bacon, Lisa Primiano, and all of the members of the senior team for their work on putting this budget before you, which is coming to you in June, is probably 3 months ahead of when we would generally be presenting this budget. So I'm very happy to get it to you for this month. We'll go through a number of documents with you, including our projected revenue and expenses for 2022, our proposed agency-wide operating budget, our proposed program budget, and a few slides that were prepared by our finance group. I'm going to provide a brief overview of the operating and program budgets and then turn the discussion over to Kara for a more detailed presentation of the components of the operating budget and statistics on our current and historical operations. The 22 budget anticipates that we will continue to have a large number of staff working remotely moving forward. We recently developed a remote work policy that I believe most all of our staff will take advantage of. Generally, it will permit staff to work remotely up to 3 days per week with approval of management. We've provided three key highlights of the fiscal year 22 budget. First, we expect to have an increase in multifamily preservation transactions that will fund through taxable loans. We also anticipate homeownership loan production to increase slightly based upon last year's volume. Single family production was a bit higher than expected given COVID, but that's certainly great news for us and our borrowers. So we expect that volume to continue. On the expense side of the 22 budget, you'll note a higher than average increase in personnel expenses, and that's primarily due to the new federal programs that we're administering on behalf of the state. Generally, there's a corresponding fee revenue to offset these expenses. With the implementation of the Rent Relief RI and Homeownership Assistance Fund, we'll be onboarding more than a dozen new employees. We propose a salary increase for staff in this budget of approximately 4%. Also, we anticipate an increase in health insurance costs, so we've estimated that increase in this budget, but we won't know the full impact of the overall increase until late fall. Most importantly, we'll continue to invest in our technology, which has become even more critical for agency continuity with the number of staff we have, and we'll continue to have working remotely in addition to the new programs that we're absorbing. Page 5 of the presentation outlines the 22 projected revenue, which is a conservative, but we believe a realistic projection. Net interest income was impacted by the pandemic and will likely continue to be given the number of loans we have in forbearance. We expect that this will continue into the 22 fiscal year. As I mentioned previously, fee income and operating expenses will be higher based upon the addition of the new federal programs, and we will be increasing our loan loss reserve by $3 million. Overall, we anticipate net revenue of $8.3 million for fiscal year 22. We believe the net income projected in the 22 budget allows us to meet the needs of Rhode Islanders while ensuring the financial soundness of the agency. So if I could now direct you to page 3 of the presentation, which outlines our projected program investment for 22. This is the program budget. Our program budget is laid out in 5 separate categories. The first category is our preventing homelessness category. We are proposing level funding of a number of programs to prevent homelessness. These programs are largely rental assistance programs, and they're legacy programs. They're programs that were more often than not created by the state and then transferred to Rhode Island Housing to continue to fund. We have slowly been moving beneficiaries of these programs to mainstream resources like Section 8 vouchers to ensure long-term affordability for their housing. As we've done so in the past, we are proposing level funding of the LISC NDF program. This is a terrific program. LISC is able to leverage an incredible amount of Section 4 dollars to also merge with our limited resources to provide capacity building for our nonprofit housing providers. I'm pleased to report that LISC has expanded access to this program and most recently has opened it up to housing authorities, which I think will be the next generation of developers that we will need to deal with, and their capacity is limited to, public housing versus, our low-income housing tax credits and other programs that might be used to preserve or to create additional resources, housing resources for public housing authorities. We are proposing an increase to our digital equity initiative. We've been working very closely with the State Office of Housing and Community Development and the Office of Innovation to use our funds in collaboration with their more significant pots of funding. We are proposing a new program, a down payment assistance program for borrowers who don't qualify for our 10K DPA program. We're proposing slightly more than $1.1 million for this CPA product, which will assist up to 110 borrowers. And finally, we're proposing to continue our work in partnership with the Office of Energy Resources and National Grid by providing funding for the development of net zero single-family homes. I'm going to stop there, Commissioner McAllister, to answer any questions, and then turn the balance of the presentation over to Kara so she can do a deeper dive into the numbers with you.
Thank you very much, Carol. Why don't we take a, we'll make a motion, we'll get a second, then we'll have Kara present, and then she can answer any detailed questions that we may have. So I'll entertain a motion.
This is Leanne, I make a motion to approve.
Thank you, I'll second that. So Kara, would you like to present, or would you like me to open it up for questions?
I can present the, you know, the balance of the presentation. That would be fine. This is Kara LaChapelle. Thank you, Commissioners. Looking at page five, I think Carol did a good job of kind of going through the higher level information. And just to go a little bit deeper on each line item, particularly our net interest income, you see a decrease there from prior year. And that really is related to the loans that are still in forbearance. As we are coming out of COVID, we still have a certain amount of borrowers who have not been able to reinstate their mortgages yet. And we believe it's going to take a little bit of time for them to reinstate. Carol did mention the fee income. A very large increase is related to the new federal programs that we are administering. It really is a direct offset to all of the expenses needed, the operating expenses needed to run those programs. If you strip those programs out, we will still have an increase in fee income of about $1 million relating primarily to our multifamily development loans, the fees that we earn on those loans. With continued low interest rates, we expect to see, you know, some good production in that area. And there are also some fees related to programs in our leased housing division as well. The gain on sale of loans is expected to increase. That is primarily related to the single family side, to our homeownership production and the increases that we anticipate there. Moving down to the expenses, the loan losses and expenses, we believe it's prudent to add another $3 million to our reserve. Our total reserve is $47 million. So this is just the amount that we would be adding to that reserve in the current year. So that $47 million covers all of the loans on our balance sheet, all of our portfolio, for both multifamily and single family loans. Particularly in this year, it is more related to our multifamily portfolio as those loans have grown over time. The market values have increased and our developers are taking advantage of refinancing, and so we need to make sure that we have adequate coverage for those loans. On the single family side, our losses have been minimal in part because of the foreclosure moratoriums. But also because more of our single family loans are insured with FHA. And so we're seeing less of a need for that loan loss reserve on the single family side. Carol went over the programmatic expenses, and so we are still able to fund a certain amount of those expenses. And I think she mentioned, you know, those are not all of the programs that we administer, just the ones that come out of our operating budget. Obviously, we administer, you know, hundreds of millions in dollars of program housing programs through other financing sources. And then looking at the operating expenses, again, those federal programs are skewing the numbers a little bit. If we back out those federal programs to make it more apples to apples, Our overall increase is about 5%, 5.1% on the operating expenses. And again, that's related to health insurance increases. We have some temporary help assisting in various departments, merit increases for our staff, and in technology costs. We've included a few graphs in the next couple of pages. The page 6 is a depiction of the revenue and expenses by division. And so you can see each business line individually and what their percentage is of the total. As part of our discussion with credit committee, we are going to add a graph as well that depicts the net revenue by division so you can see how they are contributing to the bottom line. On page 7, it contains a 5-year history of the major components of revenue, and you can see how fiscal year 22 compares to the prior years for interest income, fee income, and gain on sale. And then page 8 contains that same 5-year history for the major components of expenses, including our loan losses, our program expenses, and our operating expenses. And the final 2 pages, we have included this historically, is really a lot of detail on our operating expenses. It goes into line-by-line information, comparing to both prior year budget and prior year actual. And again, the overall increase, if we don't include those federal programs, is 5.1%. Those federal programs, the expenses are included here, but they're directly offset by the income or the fee income related to those programs. I'm not going to go into detail on specific line items, but if there is anything you want to take a look at or get more information on, now would probably be a good time to open it up for questions.
Thank you, Kara. Very great, very good presentation and laying it out here. I will open it up for questions from members of the committee.
Steve, I had a chance to look at this at the credit committee meeting last earlier in the week. You did a fine job. I'm going to follow up with a couple of little items, but overall, the budget makes a lot of sense and gives us momentum to move forward.
This is Leanne.
Thank you. I kind of a
silly question, but I mean, there were a couple of items that I assume because of COVID, there wasn't much of this happening, but like the significant percentage of increase just feels kind of yucky, like the travel expenses and meals in particular, where they're going up like 2,000%. So can you confirm that my hunch is correct, that, you know, we just had an exceptionally low year last year?
Yes, this is Kara. Yeah, you're exactly right. It's just that because the numbers are so small, when you do that calculation, the percentage, it makes the percentage look extremely high. And it really was because, you know, there was no travel, there was no activity of that kind last year.
Okay, thanks. I had no substantive concerns. That was like the only thing where it just sort of, from a reputational perspective, like just was kind of eye-popping, but I think it's easily explainable, and so I appreciate that clarification and application of that. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And my, you know, comment is I think it's a very good budget. You know, I also think that we are adapting to the times. You talked about how you now have a new working remote policy in place. We're investing in technology. We saw how important that was this past year and a half. So I'm pleased that we're continuing to do that to stay up with the times here. So I think this budget reflects that we're heading in the right direction. Any other questions or comments? Okay, hearing none, the general counsel will conduct a roll call for recommended approval.
Thank you, Commissioner. This is Corinne Myers. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of recommending the approval of the fiscal year 2022 operating budget, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Chairman Racinus?
Here.
I'm sorry, Chairman, was that an aye?
That was an aye. Yes, it was an aye.
Thank you. Commissioner Designee Burns?
Aye.
Thank you. The vote is unanimous.
Thank you very much. At this time, if there is no further business, I'll request a motion to adjourn.
Leanne, I make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you very much, Leanne. I will second that. We will conduct a roll call vote for that motion to adjourn.
This is Corinne Meyer speaking. Commissioners, when I call your name, if you are in favor of adjourning this meeting, please say aye. If you are opposed, say nay. Commissioner McAllister?
Aye.
Chairman Racina?
Aye.
Commissioner Designee Burns?
Aye.
The vote is unanimous. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I want to thank everybody for being so flexible and being able to get this meeting on the books this week. We did a lot of good stuff today, so I hope everybody has a great weekend.
Thank you, Commissioner. You too.
Thank you very much. The meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Management Committee is now adjourned. Thank you for participating.
Thank you.